So, courage and calling. There was a story I read in another book about someone describing his father, who was a fishmonger. And at the time, his father was selling a large carp to a well-to-do lady, and it was a battle to convince her. "Is it fresh?" she asked with a bit of suspicion, and this fish fairly bristled with freshness. But the game was on. The game was part of the sale. And he described the fish. The eyes are bright. The gills were a good color. The flesh was firm. And finally, he held it up to her and said, "This is beautiful." At which point, she agreed to buy it. And she said, "My, you certainly didn't miss your calling." And I think that's a bit of an old-fashioned word nowadays, calling. I don't hear it much. I think there's a bit of an irony, despite the fact that we don't use it much. Calling is actually very deep in all of us, the sense of what calling should be. We have words like vocation, and I kind of think that's not really calling. It's something to do with doing, learning a skill or a task or a qualification for a certain type of job. But we've lost this sense of calling. But the calling is right through the Bible. Calling is all of us. When we read the Bible, we see all these characters through, and we get an idea that they're special. There's something special about them. They're, after all, they're in the Bible. But I think the Bible makes it clear that calling is for all of us. Now, why is it held so deeply in us? I was thinking about this, and there's so many changes to our culture nowadays. I'm just going to put that down. There's so many changes to our culture nowadays. There's education. Either you go to Northbrook College, do a BTEC, or go to uni, perhaps do a master's, and you get to your end of your 20s before you feel you've finished the educational process. I think sometimes there's a bit of a thing about, you know, education is to fulfill our potential, as if we're some sort of unit of economy for the economy. And we need to think carefully about that. There's the role of women and men in society. It's changing enormously over the last few decades. And I think a lot of women I speak to find it very hard to match up the expectations of home and family and actually following a career at the same time. And then there's retirement. I think most of us are realizing we're going to have to retire later than we thought. We'll probably be working into our, well, paid work perhaps into our 70s. I don't know. So there's a lot of changes. And along the way, there's this sense of what is my calling within all of that. Then there's the changing work scene. No longer do we have a job for life. Jobs change. A friend of mine was a chemical engineer, and he worked for a company writing programs for engineering processes. And now he thinks, well, actually, he's been changed to become a manager. So he's leading a group of 15, and he's not doing his chemical engineering anymore. And within organizations, our roles are changing. I think also there's a hectic pace of life. And I can't imagine that any of us aren't aware of that. We feel struggling with all the demands that come upon us and all the needs around us, and life is very hectic. And I want to say one thing now. The needs around us does not determine our call. And I don't believe it's God's will that we should live frantic, hectic lives, despite the messed up world that we're in. And then we think of transitions of life. I'm going to think of three. There are probably more. Adolescence and young adulthood is a massive transition of life. You know, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I think of midlife in particular, for men in their 40s who are going grey, like me. And this time of life, you think, we're coming to terms with our limitations. You know, we realize we're not going to be all that we hope to be. What is God calling us to? And then I'm thinking of retirement. I think the word retire maybe should be spelt with a Y instead of an I. You know, our tires have lost their tread and they need to be replaced. We need to be reset with a new set of tires to get on to the next phase of life. And what's that?
Spare tires, no problem.
One thing I've noticed, despite the spare tires, how busy retired people are. And it almost seems busy because work, my diary is just work Monday, work Tuesday, and perhaps not Wednesday, but work Thursday, and there's nothing on it. But I think often retired people have got all sorts of things, they're juggling all sorts of things. Again, calling is right at the heart of all of this. You see, because our work matters, and our work matters to us, and we long to find joy, not just toil, and we long to be alive in our work. Now, of course, this isn't just paid work, this isn't just career, this is about the things we do. And we're speaking of Mother's Day, that work of being a mother to nurture and to care for, a work in retirement, our work, voluntary work. But we need to know that God is calling us that we can know joy and being alive in all that we do. So, now, our muscles are warmed up. We've got some way on our walk, and I'm going to pause a little bit. We'll have some refreshments. Well, not really. And we're going to read a couple of verses. I'm going to turn around and read it from the screen. So this is a couple of verses in Timothy where Paul, a church leader and a missionary who oversees various churches, is writing to a young chap called Timothy who leads a local church. And he says this, "For this reason I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God, which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline." And there's another reading from the Gospel, Matthew and Luke and Mark as well, a bit longer this time. "From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. 'Never, Lord,' he said, 'this shall never happen to you.' Jesus turned and said to Peter, 'Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men.'" And this is the bit to concentrate on. "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world yet forfeits his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what he has done." Now, I want us to keep those two passages firmly in our minds. They kind of feel a bit at odds, don't they? You know, fan into flame the gift of God, the gift that God has given you, and then deny ourselves and take up our cross and follow him. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about the word deny. Now, what does that mean? Has anyone kind of thought, what does that mean to deny ourselves? Kind of trips off the tongue if we've been to church, around church for a while. And I think sometimes we are a little bit too super spiritual about that word. We think, oh, it's none of me, it's all about God. Not sure that's right. Because is it talking about denying something outside of ourselves? Is it about denying chocolate in Lent, perhaps? I don't think so. I think it says very clear, we're denying ourselves. Do we deny a part of ourselves? Is it kind of the bodily appetites and the spiritual part of ourselves? Now, that's important. The Bible says we deny ourselves, our whole selves. The Archbishop of Canterbury before, Rowan Williams, not Rowan Atkinson, I get their names muddled up, Rowan Williams, he said it's better in our English translation to think of the word decenter rather than deny, because God affirms us. He affirms me and you, the unique people he has created you to be. So we don't deny that, because God hasn't denied it, but we decenter ourselves. We are no longer at the throne of our lives. Jesus is. So when we're thinking about fanning into flame the gift that God is putting with us, we're not talking about making my mark on the world or being fulfilled. God's at the center. It's about a calling to serve him and to love him. So we're gonna pick up the pace a bit. We've got some ground to cover now. So I'm going to do a bit of the background, theological background to calling, and I'm going to do it really quickly, okay? So, because I don't want to pause on it for too long. Think of a wedding cake. There's kind of a three-layered wedding cake. And the bottom layer and the middle layer are kind of general calls. The bottom layer is a human vocation. We look right back to Genesis when God called Adam to tend the garden, to be fruitful, to be steward, and to name the animals. Something about that is what it is to be human. I think Jeremy Vine's done a series on what it is to be human. And occasionally when I'm in the car, I pick up on it. Has anyone heard any of those? People listen to Jeremy Vine? Yeah. I've only heard one or two of them. But there's something here in Genesis about what it is to be human. And we fast forward right through the biblical story, right to the end, to Revelations 22, when there's this new garden city where there's beauty and there's architecture. And there's all sorts of stuff we're going to be involved in. So that's what it is to be human. So that's the bottom of the wedding cake. The middle layer, I'm going to suggest, because is the Christian vocation. So there's human vocation, Christian vocation. And this, again, is a call to all of us who are fallen and lost. God calls us, and he summons us to participate in his God-given purpose for the world. So what we call here partnership with God. And we've been doing this over the last few weeks. We've talked about we are being called to be united with Christ. We're called to church. We're called to discipleship. We're called to mission. And we're called to holiness. That's all sermons that have been preached here in the last few months. We've talked about your life is now hidden with Christ in God. So when we think about personal calling and my personal calling, we have to see it with that human vocation and Christian vocation. And the top layer I'm going to talk more about is personal vocation. Now, the thing about calling is obviously there's a subject to the word, and the calling is given. It is God who does the calling. It's pretty simple, really. But so often nowadays, and people, if they use the word calling, they're thinking about something we're engendering up within ourselves. God calls us. And he calls you, and he calls me, and he calls us by name. And he calls us to something. He doesn't just call us, he calls us to live, to belong in him, to be in him, and to do for him, to serve him. So it's sacred. So each one of us here has a personal, particular, sacred call on our lives. It's not just for young people thinking ahead of life. It's everybody in whatever situation we find ourselves in now. I want to say something about careers, actually, at this point. And career and work is not the same thing as calling. I may find some expression of my calling in my career. And career may be some reflection of my calling. But it's not calling, because God gives us our calling. If we were made redundant and they got rid of our job, they can't disavow us of our calling, because God gives us our calling. So, that's the theology bit. We've had a bit of a walk through that. I want to now think about discerning our calling. Because that's the question on mind. Okay, this is all very well, but how do I know for me what God calls me to be and to do? So we're going to stop in our walk. There's a bit of a plateau here. We're just going to relax, and we're going to think about those questions. And the first thing to say is we need others in that process. Something about calling feels quite individualistic, doesn't it? We did that thing a while ago, and his questions about, are we individualists or are we collectivists? And I had a chat with Paul afterwards, and I agreed with Paul, and I think individualism is good as well as collectivism. Of course, if you're really balanced, you would have been exactly 5-5 both way. But we do need others in our calling. Every time I go drive to work, I drive past Pulborough Rugby Football Club, and they have a notice up saying, calling new members. And every time I drive past there, I think, I quite fancy that. And I have to admit that I've had a sense of calling on my life, of scoring tries for England and such like over the years. And I'm thinking, if I join Pulborough Rugby Football Club, I'll start and get into it, and who knows where it may lead to. But thankfully, My friends will say to me, and my wife will actually as well, my friends will say, mm-mm, that's not your calling. So we need others. The first thing I would say about this is calling is to do with identity. That often a crisis of calling is to do with a crisis of identity. Who am I? And so that's part of the process. Who am I? So I would suggest a couple of things. When we think about who I am, look back at your lives. Look back at the stories of your lives, the difficulties. What have they taught us in our life? What have we learnt from seeing the Spirit at work in our lives? We had a partnership group a few years ago where for one evening, each of us, just one of us for an evening, would tell the story of our life to the others. And it was great. And we learnt about each other and we learned about ourselves in the process, actually, and it was a good thing to do. So think about the stories of our lives. The second thing is be fully present. So that's looking at the past, but then we look at our circumstances. We look at our families, our communities, our works, our trainings, and we need to fulfill our responsibilities in the present. So that's another part of it. So here are four questions, moving on from there. And I'm going to suggest that these four questions for all of us are good for us all to do, to go through. One, it can confirm us that we're in the right place. Two, it can help us kind of tweak where we are and think, actually, I need to be doing that a bit more. There may be some here who just are struggling with a whole sense of calling, and maybe for some, it's going to mean a change, which makes us fearful. The four questions. What are our gifts and talents? What are our competences? Now, if you're like me, I find that a hard question to answer, and I kind of need other people because I can't quite see them in myself, and I think perhaps there are others who feel similarly. We need others to encourage us in that, and I'm asking us all, in a sense, to encourage one another. If we see people and we think, that's really good, God is really working in them and doing this, let's encourage other people in that, because we need others. So first question, gifts and talents. The second question, what is our personality or temperament? Now, there are questionnaires you can go through. I think they can be helpful to a certain extent, but again, we need each other. When I was at medical school, deciding what you're going to do with your life, you do various jobs, you do surgery, pediatrics, and such like. And I was thinking, well, I quite like use of my hands. I think I'm dexterous. I think I can use my hands. I could be a surgeon. But then I realized, when I do a bit of DIY, a bit of carpentry, I start off ever so careful, getting the joints just right. But after about an hour or so, I've just... I'll put it together and stitch up and go. So I decided. So when you've got your arms in, you can't do that. But actually, they don't have arms in anymore. They look through telescopes, don't they? Yes, yes. So I realized that my temperament was not good to be a surgeon. The third question is, what gives us joy and delight? What gives us real joy and delight? Because that's going to be different for us all. What do I enjoy? Despite the difficulties and the problems and the strains and the constraints of work or whatever we're doing, if at core and at root and what we're doing, we're not having joy in it, we don't enjoy it, we're probably doing the wrong thing. And if, like me a while ago, your boiler stopped working and a certain company, which will remain nameless, sent all these people round who looked utterly disinterested, and it was freezing and it never worked and they couldn't be bothered with their work, they weren't enjoying. I don't want a heating engineer to come round my house who doesn't enjoy what he's doing, who doesn't think, what's the problem, and get to the bottom of it and put it right. So then we asked Steve to come, and I think he sorted it all out for us. The point is, if we're not enjoying at root what we're doing, listen to that in ourselves and think to ourselves, perhaps God's calling me to something different. And the fourth question is, where do we see the brokenness and need of the world around us or our community? Now, that just seems a bit of a funny thing to say, really, but I'm going to suggest that we all see that in different ways. Some of us see the need for beauty, and we need beautiful civic open spaces, and we need beautiful architecture. That's where they see it. Some people see the need for education. That's what we need in our society. Some people see the need for our economy, which is a good thing, that our economy is such that there is a fair distribution of wealth across our society. So some people will be involved in economics. That's where they see the need. And often when people stand up and tell you of their need, they're passionate about it, and they try and draw you into it. And you go and you think, well, I know, but I can't get quite so passionate about that. It's not quite. But that's okay, because we're all different, and we all see need in a different way. So vocation, discerning our vocation, is found in the interplay of these four questions. And I kind of think it would be good if we do a bit of that together at church, in our partnership groups. There'll be something coming out this week for partnership groups to think about. And I'm going to suggest there'll be something on the website, I think it's the Facebook on our website, for a forum. So if people want to just throw out questions, we can interact with each other, we can talk to each other. So what is our calling? So we're now on a walk. We just meandered. We now sit. Don't downhill stretch, just around the corner and back to the start, okay? There is something wonderful about God calling us. There is something wonderful because it frees us. It frees us from trying to be like somebody else. It frees us, each one of us, to be myself. It frees us from feeling intimidated. It frees us from the past. Now, I can't remember the quote just on Isaiah, that forget the former things, for God is doing a new thing. Sometimes the past can hold on to us, and we see, you know, after all, we did commit ourselves to that, and we can't turn our back on that. We look at our past mistakes and regrets, and they can hold us back. And God, in his calling upon our lives to serve him, frees us from the past. It frees us from the expectation of others. Some of us, I think, have borne the burden of undue expectations on us, maybe even by our parents. And we need to find God's calling through all of that. It frees us and to let go of secondary goods, the good things that come our way. But there's so many of them. This last week, I was asked by a good friend for their daughter, a medical student, to be with us at the practice, at the surgery, for 2 months. It involves paperwork, it involves organisation, it involves looking after her, it involves doing all of these things. It's quite a lot of work. It's a good thing. And I thought to myself, I'd like to do that. We've done it before, it's fine, it'd be nice to have her. But I thought carefully about it, and I thought to myself, that isn't the good thing that God is calling me to at the moment. And I decided to say no. So I think when we know and discern God's calling, we can have wonderful joy and delight in following him in the way he's called us. And we're freed from having to say yes to everything. I think I want to, at the end of this, draw us back to something that we read before, right at the beginning, that God calls us to deny ourselves, to take up our cross, and follow him. This talk is nothing about everything is wonderful, and we find our vocation, then everything will be easy, and we'll have a great life, and we'll be fulfilled, and such like. In all of this is wonderful, deep down joy and delight at serving God. What better thing is there than that? Whether it be manual work or scholarly work, and that's manual, not menial. Manual is sacred, as unto God. Whether it be religious or secular, it's a silly thing. Ken Len Ben the other week was talking about that. We're all full-time Christian workers. We do not want a minister who wants to recruit us to do his calling for him. I'm not suggesting Andy does, but there are churches who do that. What we want is ministers who can help to equip us in our callings. And it's not, it's practical, it's creative, and it's practical. It's not about those kind of creative things that people have a real passion and sense for, but also the practical things. Occasionally I have to do minor surgery, cut out a little skin lump or something like that. And what the patient does not want me to do is some creative sweep of the scalpel. They do not want me to have beautiful, symmetrical stitching and everything like that. They just want me to be practical. And that is God's calling for that particular situation. But in all of this, I think we need to learn two things as well. That we need to learn to be patient. I think God sometimes leads us through times of life when sometimes we may feel a little distant from him. Sometimes we may feel it all over our heads. But we're not alone. God is graciously with us. And he teaches us patience to depend on him. So sometimes it takes time. And I think as we read in that passage, the deny ourselves, decenter ourselves, and take up our cross and follow him, that was after Jesus talked about his suffering on the cross. And so there's something about where our true calling is, bears the marks of the cross. That as we follow our true calling, we take up our cross and follow him. And that brings setbacks and disappointments and suffering. But we are not alone. And we do not lose heart because God is with us. We consider Jesus who went through all of that suffering. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men that you will not lose heart. So I'm excited about that God calls you and me. He calls us to be truly human. He calls us to be truly united with Christ and all the wonder and the joy of that. But he also calls me and you by name, to live for him and to serve him. And despite the suffering that comes our way, we have great joy in that. So I'm going to read the verse again. 2 Timothy 1, 6 and 7, if I can find it. Here we go. Paul writes to Timothy, and he could write to us, each one of us now. Fan into flame the gift of God which is in you. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. By the Holy Spirit, take courage and live out God's calling.